You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our new summer music series called Setlist. We invited Wisconsin artists into the WPR studios for interviews and exclusive musical performances, which will air every Friday at this time until Labor Day weekend. Wisconsin native J.E. Sundy now calls Minneapolis home, but he cut his musical teeth in the vibrant Eau Claire music scene that helped launch many great Wisconsin musicians. He recently dropped by the WPR studios to play some songs and talked to Veronica Rickard about how growing up in Amory, Wisconsin has influenced his latest album, Shapes That Kiss the Lips of God.
The black howl of the night is dogging me restless and worn, causing me ceaseless concern and all manner of harm.
J.E. Sundy, thank you so much for coming into the studio and playing for us today.
Oh man, it's my pleasure.
Well, your album is called Shapes That Kiss the Lips of God. Can you tell us a little bit about what the title means?
Yeah, sure. It's a line drawn from one of the tunes that I wrote. It's called Hickory Point Lane in the Fall, and it's where I grew up. And the line refers to birds migrating, shapes that kiss the lips of God.
Is it your phrase?
Yeah, that one, after kind of debating about what to title the record, that one just kept coming back to me, and so I trusted it, and I've enjoyed it.
And you grew up in Amory, Wisconsin.
That's right, yeah.
And I've read that this album is sort of autobiographical for you. Not explicitly so, not totally, but there are strains like that. How do you think about that in terms of how personal it is for you?
Yeah, the songs kind of came out of about 10 years. I played in another band called The Daredevil Christopher Wright. And we were, for about 10 years, doing it very seriously. And in that time, kind of a back catalog of songs started developing that for various reasons just didn't get turned into Daredevil songs. And so every once in a while I'd play things solo, and I generally kind of draw from that catalog of things. And so, and it just so happened, as I kind of was putting together the record, that as I looked at kind of the songs that were becoming the record, it just seemed to kind of chronicle the 10 years interestingly.
Does that make it kind of nostalgic for you, looking back on those 10 years a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it revealed itself in that way, and it was kind of a nostalgic, or it just felt good as a kind of a statement of that time for me, I guess, which was, I don't know, personally and artistically satisfying, I think.
Change.
I read that you said that for some of these songs, you had to just not shy away from the shadow of your influences, like Nina Simone, Leonard Cohen. Were you reluctant at first to go that way and to reflect on this other music that you loved?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think for anybody who's making stuff, especially in the arts, there's that kind of tension between, you know, people that you admire and are certainly drawing from in terms of people who influence you, but then also this draw or desire to create something original. And so the tension is there always. And we would, with the guys in Daredevil, we would have pretty long discussions about the place of influences, you know, and whether you should purely be striving for originality or whether you should honor kind of these, mm-hmm. you know, the things that are inspiring you in a more direct way. And after a while, I just got so exhausted by the responsibility of trying to be original that I was putting on myself. It just didn't, like, the notion as I went to write a song that, like, okay, I need to write something that is original, just didn't seem to be energizing me at all. It felt more crippling than, like, freeing, you know? And so at some point, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to try to follow things that feel intuitive and feel good. And if they happen to be derivative or they happen to sound like Paul Simon or Leonard Cohen, I'm just going to be okay with that, you know? And the best thing is just to try to create something you're excited about and then trust as best as you can that that's going to be something that somebody else is going to get excited about too. And that's about as good as you can do. I've just kind of given up on the whole, like, fear of derivativeness at this point, mostly. Sometimes. Often.
Some of the time.
I'm going to disappoint you someday. try and say the right things, and I'll do my best, but you know it can't last.
I want to ask a little bit about your voice, because it seems as though you've got an incredible range. Was that always natural for you?
No. I've been singing and, my whole life, and have been interested in it for as long as I can remember. But then I went to college at UW-Eau Claire and studied voice. I learned the, Western classical tradition. And throughout my time learning singing in choirs and singing in chamber groups and singing solo in this Western classical style, I was playing in bars and venues and playing rock and roll and folk stuff. And that was the stuff I was more passionate about. And so I kind of had a foot out the door a little bit. So, I mean, there are people who really struggle with being schooled in music in terms of they feel really confined by the structures or the rules of that particular style of music. But I just never really, maybe because I always had these two kind of parallel musical worlds going on, I never felt bound by the rules of classical music. It was more like, this is a beautiful way to understand your body and your voice, how it's connected, and you can use this stuff in any kind of music.
Don't doubt that I could love you if you let me. I can't bear to think that you'd ever forget me, so I will give it a try.
And along the way you found yourself to the Eau Claire music scene, it sounds like you were there when a lot was going on, and yeah. You were part of this circle with S. Carey and Bon Iver, Justin Vernon. Mm-hmm. What was it like being part of that scene then, and how did it influence you?
Yeah, like you said, I grew up in Amory, Wisconsin, which is a little town, and there isn't really a tradition of kids making bands for as long as I can remember. And so I thought, when I go to college, I'm going to start a band. College is where you make bands. And so it was interesting. I got to the orientation week my freshman year in Eau Claire. One of the bands they had on campus was Diarmid Edison, which was the Megaphone guys and Justin Vernon's former band. And I saw them literally the first week I was in Eau Claire, and it was just like I was seeing a band that I was totally blown away by. From then on, I mean, it was just like there's just this strong tradition of these people, like between the kids who grew up in the Chippewa Valley and then also people coming in for university, that have just mixed to create this long tradition of people making really great bands and a diversity of bands between the jazz programs and the folk and rock scenes and stuff like that. And it was just like this total soup of people creating, but also very small enough that you could, if you wanted to, you could be a part of it, you know? Field Report and Chris Porterfield or S. Carey or some of these guys, and I pause and like look back and realize that like there's an amazing amount of people that I met in that time that are still creating better and better art 10 years later, and that, so I feel like it really was a pretty unique time and place in terms of all these things coming together that I'm really grateful for.
Was it empowering when Bon Iver took off that you guys were all there and you could say, wow, this guy can make it, everybody's got a shot?
Totally. I mean, initially it was like total drunk by proximity kind of thing. Everybody's like, we're all going to be on these big record labels, and it's from here on out, we're all enormous successes. No, I mean, but it was just unbelievable to see somebody you knew and making this amazing record and suddenly the world just totally flipping out about it. But like I say, I mean, I've seen the course of then these other acts who are still doing it and making great music and touring and are connected with strong labels now. And I just know the work that they've put in. And so I think it gave me the perspective that most of that success is grounded on an enormous amount of work, which is very much anybody can do an enormous amount of work if you want to.
That's a question you've thought a lot about over the years, what it means to make art and song and really go full in, all in on that, and really pursue your passion for music. But on the other hand, there's also this set of societal expectations about getting a job, settling down, not touring. Mm-hmm. Have you faced that and what society you've come out on?
Yeah, you know, I turned 31 this year, and, you know, for basically my entire adult life, I've been trying to play music. And I wrestled a lot with this notion of, well, do I find a career? And if so, what would that be? I mean, I have no other... The abiding passion of my life is music, you know, and if I'm an expert at anything, it's that. I've spent more time doing that than anything else. And because of that, I haven't cultivated an enormously impressive resume to present to some, you know, institution that I'm really excited about. And so it was a time of really difficult transition. But after... wrestling with that for a while, I kind of came to this piece where I recognized, you know what, I just believe in passion. I believe that our society should at the very least honor our passions much more than we do. That doesn't mean it's going to be your job necessarily, but I feel like too quickly we dismiss our dreams and the things that we love to do. And so for me, I realized, you know what, I will get a job cleaning houses part-time, and then I will play music. And I think, at least at this point, I think I could clean houses for my whole life if it allows me to make music. That may change, but yeah, I've come to a lot of peace about that at this moment. Talk to me in a week and we'll see, but that's where I'm at. So,
Jay, thank you so much for coming to the studio and talking today and playing. Appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
That was singer-songwriter J.E. Sundy. You can find out more about him at jesundy.com. The Setlist Summer Music Series airs here on Central Time every Friday at 4:15 through early September. To learn more about the artists featured on Setlist, including songs and videos of their exclusive performances at our WPR studio, head over to wpr.org/setlist. Next Friday on this summer's final episode of Setlist, we'll feature the Madison post-rock band El Valiente. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. With the poison, we'll bury him deep in his earthy.